This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk.
Should we get on and actually try some of these wines? We've got a Blanc de Blanc 2001 here that Matthew Jukes wrote up about a while ago and described it as one of his favourite sparkling wines of all time.
Chris, we're extremely happy. Obviously, we've worked extremely hard over the years to develop consistency. I think in terms of producing a sparkling wine, consistency is the word. And then obviously, as a winemaker, we've got the opportunity to do a bit of a thumbprint if we label it as a vintage, because there we can really talk about the expression of a specific year. So the wine I'd like to sort of show you is our Blanc de Blanc 2001 vintage. And I'm really, if I look into what Matthew has said, I really can't add much, because it's a delightful sparkling wine, or fizz in that sense. And the intrinsics of this wine is that it's got a beautiful texture. It's got a very soft, gentle sparkle. This wine has had 4.5 years on the lees, so it's really gained lots of complexity by having it on the lees for such a long time. First of all, on the nose, you'll definitely find that sort of beautiful nutty characteristic that definitely stems from the yeast autolysis. And then there's this beautiful expression of fruit on the palate.
The yeast autolysis, that's where the yeast that created the bubbles stays in the bottle, and it slowly sort of breaks down, doesn't it, releasing aromas into the wine.
Yeah, the yeast that you add for that fermentation in the bottle that will develop the sparkle naturally is a scavenger. It gobbles up anything, all the sugars, all the amino acids, and all the, you know, you need to sort of keep in the wine. So after this fermentation, the yeast sort of goes into a relaxed mode. Some cases, papers do state that the yeast sort of dies off. But as they sort of go into this relaxed mode, they start giving off all these beautiful flavors. So relatively speaking, the longer you can keep it in the bottle, on that lees, the more characteristic you'll pick up from the yeast.
It says in your notes about this wine that it said 50% barrel aging.
Yeah.
You get a creaminess on the nose maybe that you might associate with a barrel, but it doesn't really come across as vanillary. What's causing that?
It's really a phenomena that I really picked up in my travels all around the world. And with respect, I think Krug, if there is a champagne, you know, that one will say house style, is that they do 100% of their wines through this barrel fermentation. But it goes a little bit beyond that, just to give you a bit of detail. It was a measuring tool in Champagne, where they were allowed to fill 13 barrels out of one pressing. So they had 4 tons of grapes going into a press, and then the first 10 that they filled was the cuvée fraction, which was the absolute quality. They had one which was the premier taille, which was the first pressing, and they were allowed to fill another 2. So after barrel 13, the press had to be emptied. The rest was declassified as base wine for Champagne. But I think what we've learned by looking at the oak intrinsics is that it definitely creates biscuity aromatics and creamy textures. One has to be careful that the bubble in the wine is a magnifying glass.
Yep.
So if you have too much new oak in there, obviously it's going to be pretty oaky, and then it's just going to be a wine with bubbles in it. So you have to be very careful how you use the oak. So the integration of the oak is that we only use 8 to maximum 10% of new barrels every year in the program for the Blanc de Blanc.
Okay. You almost feel that there's a hint of vanilla there, but you don't really get it. You get a nice creamy texture coming through.
I would like to say, you know, that sort of vanilla is maybe just the sunshine in there.
Okay.
Don't forget, we're in the sunny South Africa.
The other one we're going to try is the Chardonnay Viognier 2006.
That's right, the Chardonnay Viognier. It's the second vintage of this particular style. Why Chardonnay Viognier? You know, why not in that sense? I think it's two varieties that really has done pretty well in South Africa. Viognier is fairly newly planted in South Africa. We're learning day by day more about this grape. I think it gives Chardonnay just another lift, you know. If you look at the wine, I think with Chardonnay, where you'll get lemons and limes and giving sort of the texture of the wine, the Viognier just brings up the more tropical nuances, and then sort of apricots and peaches.
There's a bit of peachy apricot in there as well. Unoaked.
It's unoaked.
Stainless,
stainless steel.
Keep that real fresh top.
So, but we'll ferment the Chardonnay and Viognier because they don't ripen at the same time. We'll ferment them separately. But soon after both is fermented dry, we will then look at the blending opportunity. In this case, this year, there's 84% Chardonnay, 16% Viognier in there. We will then do the blending, but we'll combine the blend with both of its lees, the fermentation lees, and then we'll give it a stir every sort of 3 to 4 days for 2 months prior to getting it ready.
The lees are the dead yeast from the original fermentation, and you just leave it there just to add a bit of creaminess to it, is it?
Lees is a fantastic tool for a winemaker. It not only keeps the wine fresh and, you know, sort of in a reduced phase, it also allows you to get away by using less sulfur, which I think is really, really a positive direction.
Sulfur dioxide, which you normally use to control the oxidization.
The oxidation.
The wine turning to vinegar.
So with lees, as long as you keep the tank full, you don't need any sulfur.
Oh, okay.
So we'll only adjust the sulfur prior to bottling. And I think this is far more of a healthier way to produce wines, in more of a natural way. Then the yeast definitely adds that texture, the mouthfeel. You know, I think we've become designer winemakers in that sense, you know. And our focus have shifted not on the aromatics, because I think we are very fortunate to have the natural aromatics, but it's to concentrate on the mid-palate.
Yeah, and that's where the lees comes through, isn't it, in the mid-palate?
Yeah, I think the lees comes through as the texture, you know, that sort of creamy flavor. You can feel it on the palate, soft and creamy. Keep in mind, this is produced, you know, 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, so it's still quite young.
By stirring the lees, which is the batonnage, it's the stirring of the lees, the yeast just sort of creates sort of a polishing effect around the acidity in terms of a white wine, because there's no real tannins involved in this wine. It's totally un-oaked. And sort of coats the acidity. So even with that nice freshness, as this wine finishes quite fresh and dry, you've got this nice polishing effect of the mid-palate. So you get this creamy texture on the palate coming from the lees contact.
Now that I've swallowed the wine, I'm getting quite a warming sensation from the alcohol. It's not sharp or anything like that, but what percentage is it?
This is 14.2, quite warm. But then again, you know, Chardonnay we know, and we have vineyards that can handle. The sort of warmness will definitely be driven by the Viognier. I'm trying to understand Viognier as we work with this. I think Viognier is a white grape trying to grow up to be a red grape. It's one of the few white grape varieties that actually has a tannin. So you have to look at phenolic ripeness, not only sugar ripeness.
Yeah.
And invariably, when you want to get to phenolic ripeness, you are picking the grapes far riper. So this would
Touching on phenolic versus sugar.
Yes.
It's like in the white vineyard, you'd normally determine when to pick. You'd be looking at the sugar level that would determine maybe the potential alcohol level, or you'd pick on the flavor of the grapes and how they taste. And that would be your phenolic ripeness, is it?
Absolutely. You're spot on there. And I think you have to understand the intrinsics. Phenolics, if you pick it too green just on sugar, you're going to get a bitter streak because you've got green tannin. So you have to follow the phenolics to get it right. And obviously in sunny South Africa, it's more of a challenge, because invariably having that amount of sunshine, sugar ripeness invariably will come first. But we're working extremely hard on canopy management, creating far more shade, that we have a slower ripening to induce a quicker ripening of the phenolics.
Yeah. The last one we were going to try is the Ridge Syrah. Is that a reasonably new wine for you guys, or you've been producing it for a while?
This is a single vineyard, and the first time we produced this was in 1997. It was the first year, then the vineyard was 4 years old. And it's really interesting, as time has gone by, how this little vineyard is just carving its own little niche. Obviously, with the geographical information data that we've managed to get on this vineyard has become far more harmonious in terms of the picking detail on this wine. And yeah, it's just a fascinating little Shiraz from Robertson.
It's feeling, on the nose, it's got that real deep, broody sort of smell to it. Quite ripe. Not jammy ripe like you get with the Australian Shiraz, but certainly not lean like you get in maybe a Rhone style. sort of somewhere between the two?
Yeah, I think it's understanding a little bit of what the new world can do in terms of extraction, and then sort of more the leaner, Rhone-like characteristics. The wine's definitely in the middle for me. But the approach to this wine, to try and manage it in this way, is that we do a cold soaking as the fruit comes in.
To leave the skin in contact with the juice?
With its own juice. And we do this at around 10 to 12 degrees, so it's fairly cool. We will allow this to happen a day to maximum 2 days. In day three, we will inoculate this with a specific yeast strain. And as this fermentation kicks off immediately, we will then press it. And as the juice runs from the press, we take it straight into barrel.
Yeah.
And then it finishes the alcoholic fermentation in barrel.
Okay.
Remains in there for malolactic.
That's the conversion of malo acids to lactic acids, the softer, creamier acid you get in milk.
That makes the wine softer and, again, developing the mouthfeel. And I think if this can all happen, the sooner it can happen in a barrel, I think you just get far more of a complete wine. And I think that's where you can build in your density. I think you mentioned the density.
Yeah, it comes quite a mass. Just on the nose, it just feels quite heady almost, but not jammy heady.
No, no, no. I think jam is left there for breakfast and things like that. That goes on to toast.
You don't suggest Shiraz for breakfast.
Well, why?
Maybe.
Sometimes, you know, the morning after. But the intrinsics here is that we use far more French oak. It's also not only new oak. We're trying to keep a natural balance.
What sort of toastiness have you got in there? Cause some people really char the inside of barrels. I'm getting a whiff of chocolatiness on the nose.
Yeah. I enjoy medium toasting. I don't like the heavy toasts because you get a lot of blistering and it's just not too nice. You know, it becomes too extractive. High vanilla aromas then comes into play. But going the sort of medium toasting, I would even consider then to have rather than light toasted heads.
The top and the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, yeah, to do that rather than going for a full roasty barrel.
The wine's very nice. And what's the retail price around?
That is around £15.
So that top premium wines?
Yeah, I think we're still aspiring. We always like to say there's another better one in the cellar still. But reluctant to bring it out here. But no, yeah, that is more of a super premium category. And yeah, we're working on developing the categories.
Where did the grapes come from for the... This is your Ridge Serra. Where does it come from? It
comes from Robertson. It's quite amazing, you know, that when Graham Beck established the winery there and he had this idea of producing sparkling wine, everybody wrote him off. Today we've proven that. And with the track record of the Ridge as it's going along, Robertson is seems to be good for both.
And just to finish off, Peter, it's been great to have you on the show. What's your top tip for the people listening?
For people out there, I really think wine is a beautiful thing and we have to share it. And invariably, when you open a bottle of wine, you've got great company. And the one thing that you must not neglect is the wine and food aspect. You know, you're going to invariably share a good glass of wine with your best buddy, and you're going to have great food with it. So in that, I think the tip should be is that you should always explore between the reaction of wine flavor and the flavors from food. I pretty much would like to say cooking is one of my hobbies. And really, once you start exploring, taking one dish, bringing two wines to it, it's quite interesting. I think sometimes people really try too hard to get it right. We're having fish tonight. Oh, yeah, definitely a white wine. I can tell you there's many reds that will outplay a white wine with a fish dish.
All right, thank you very much, Peter. It's been great talking to you.
That's fantastic. Thank you.